hearing for the Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel remand. This is the Board of County Commissioners. We are in the Anbasker Auditorium. The matter under consideration this morning under the Josephine County Land Use Rules for hearings and as they apply to the remand. This is not the original hearing. This is a remand from the Land Use Board of Appeals. The remand hearing to the Board of County Commissioners of the LUBA appeal decision for the comprehensive plan of Josephine County, Ordinance 81-11 as amended, from forest to aggregate and amending the zoning map of Josephine County, Ordinance 85-1 as amended, from woodlot resource to mineral and aggregate resources, and add to the inventory of significant aggregate sites for 197.34 acres of the property identified in Assessor's Map, Township 34 South, Range 5 West, Section 7, Tax Lots 1200 and 1300, and maps Township 34 South, Range 5 West, Section 8, Tax Lot 400. The property owners are Andreas and Carol Bleck. Also amending the Comprehensive Plan of Josephine County, Ordinance 81-11 as amended, from residential to aggregate and amending the zoning map of Josephine County, Ordinance 85-1 as amended, from rural residential, RR5, to mineral and aggregate resources and adding to the inventory of significant aggregate sites for 12.49 acres of the property identified as Assessor's Map T, Township 34 South, Range 5 West, Section 8, Tax Lot 1002. The property owner is Bleck LLC. And I think we're going to have, we have the hearing rules that are available over here on the side. Did each of the parties receive a copy of the hearing rules? Pardon? It was in the packet. The hearing rules of the packet. Okay. I want to confirm that you did receive those. All participants are obliged to know and follow the rules of the procedures contained in Article 31 of the Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, and that's the RLDC. If we're using acronyms today, I hope to read those out. If I don't, please let me know. As it applies to public hearings, the planning staff present has a copy of those rules. Does anyone here object to the jurisdiction of the board to hear this matter? Hearing none. Basis for the hearing, and this is the hearing that involves a decision by the board which was appealed to the Land Use Board of Appeal, otherwise known as LUBA. As a result of this appeal, LUBA has remanded to the county the decision for further consideration. This is an evidentiary hearing. The remand application for this hearing requests the board to consider new evidence. Parties may testify, introduce documents, and call witnesses. The hearing is strictly limited to the issues or issues specified by LUBA.
Pardon? Number three.
No member of the board, I imagine, wishes to abstain from hearing.
Oh, the last sentence.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let me finish the scope of hearing here, and then I will go back. The remand application, I'll start over. Remand application for this hearing requests the board to consider new evidence. Parties may testify, introduce documents, and call witnesses. The hearing is strictly limited to the issues or issues specified by LUBA in its remand decision. All evidence and arguments must relate to the remand issues. No other issues will be considered. And then we have the usual procedure. Before I go into the procedure, I want to ask if any of the board members wishes to abstain from this hearing. We have full board participate. The order of procedure, the planning staff over here will provide a report regarding the remand. The applicant is allowed 10 minutes for argument, and each witness called by the applicant is allowed 5 minutes. Parties who oppose the applicant's request are allowed 10 minutes, and each witness called by the opposing party is allowed 5 minutes. The applicant is allowed 5 minutes for rebuttal. Any surrebuttal is at the discretion of this board. The applicant and other parties are allowed 5 minutes for summary arguments. Staff is given an opportunity to comment. The board may ask questions of staff or the participants, and the board then closes the record and deliberates. The board may adjust the above time limits at its discretion. We have received a request for extension of time based on the number of issues remanded by the state. Did you also receive a copy of those, Board?
Yes.
Okay. It asks for an hour to present information on all of these six issues, and so I was wondering if that was something that you wish to entertain at this time.
Who made that request?
It was made by the, I believe it was Rogue Advocates.
Yes.
Yes, it was made by Rogue Advocates.
Appropriate for both sides.
Pardon?
That's appropriate for both sides?
Yes, it would apply to both sides. Because if you give one the time, you must give the other the also the same.
An hour seems a little excessive, but I can see that the statutory time provided is a little brief, so somewhere in between is probably an appropriate length of time. It isn't necessary for either the applicant or those who are here in opposition to reiterate everything that's been provided in the written record. The board is familiar with that, so it's really just an opportunity to make those salient points in this hearing here today. So I think that's important for people to remember, that what is being presented orally is not the entire record. It's actually just a very small portion of the record. So I'd be happy to amend it, but maybe not for a whole hour on either side.
Commissioner Heck?
I would be the same. I don't know if it's possible to make it up to, you know, 40 minutes or up to 30 minutes or something. But an hour does seem to be a bit long to respond to these four issues, not to rehash the whole procedure again.
30 minutes seems reasonable, 5 minutes per issue, six issues.
Four of them are rebuttals of the letters, and then the other two are the Deer Winter Range and the Grays Creek Bridge. So the six issues.
I'd be happy to see up to 30 minutes.
Yeah, I don't care how we divide the time.
Okay, do I have a motion to that effect?
I make a motion to amend. The way they're delineated here is not the way they're delineated here. So
well, that one is not correct. That last one, I was just informed by planning that one is not correct. It's going to be, it's different.
So it's the order of procedure that's outlined here?
Yes.
I don't have a yellow sheet.
Okay. Is that different from this one?
And then I can make a motion.
Okay, may we see that, please?
So I would make a motion to amend the proponent's, the applicant's case time from 10 minutes to 30 minutes, and the opponent's time, representative, if any, to be equally 30 minutes.
And I would second that.
Okay, a motion to second. Any further discussion?
Our expectation was that for other time limits would stay the same.
Now is the time to change. If you think it is appropriate to change those others, let's include that at this time.
Well, I think the request was only for the actual case, mm-hmm. not questions or other things. So okay. I'm happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for those present, the change here would be the proponent's or the applicant's case. They would have 30 minutes to make their presentation. And then the opponent's representative would be 30 minutes also. The other for the expert witnesses or others in favor or questions of staff, those are each remaining at 5 minutes. The rebuttals are at 10 minutes. Those would remain the same. And opponent's serve rebuttals would be at 5 minutes, as well as the applicant or the representative at 5 minutes. So those would remain the same?
Yep.
Well, and let me raise the question, because number one on here says the staff report, there's no limit. That's totally out of whack to my understanding of things. I mean, if you're going to, you could go on theoretically for 4 hours and they're going to have 30 minutes. I'm just saying theoretically. So if we want to stick a time frame on there, let's stick a time frame on there. The staff report's not going to go on any longer than 30 minutes either.
There's never a delineation on staff, and it's really at the behest of the board. We set that time. It would be like giving us a time limit, which is probably
not
what a lot of people would like, but we don't do that. And I'd be opposed to that.
Well, I would simply say it after, but if it goes on more longer than 30 minutes, I'm gonna be meditating loudly.
So. We'll hold your questions then.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to have a sense of humor here. Okay. All right. Remains the same?
Yes.
Okay. We have a motion. No further discussion. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. So each party will have 30 minutes for their presentations. Okay. I did not state the parties to the appeal, being William M. Corcoran II, Elizabeth A. Corcoran, and the Rogue Advocates. So I think we are now ready for the staff report. We have Grace Zilverberg, our planner.
Grace Zilverberg, Dothan County Planning. I promise you it will not be half an hour. Just one little housekeeping thing. In the staff report, there was an incorrect date in the attachments, last page, page four of the in the planner's narrative. It said it was the date of the decision was 11/26/2008. That should be October 8th, 2014, and also needed to be corrected on the title page of Exhibit B. So that's a correction. So essentially, as you know, this is parties only testifying, and I am going to give you a just kind of a click, 1, 2, 3, what the issues are.
Switch over to science. We have a tutorial on that one already.
Can you see that?
Let's see.
Can you hear me now?
Speak very loudly.
Can you hear me? Oh, okay. Well, I haven't really started yet. I do have a couple extra if anybody wants one. Okay, so essentially the top table is kind of the order that Luba did it, or like the way it's presented in the staff report. The bottom table is kind of the Luba arrangement of it, so there's a little confusion about how many issues are involved. And the reason for that is one of the issues incorporates four. Topics.
Is that able to be enlarged at all?
I was trying.
It's very difficult for people to see that.
Being electronically challenged, I don't know if, is it Keith? Our guy, if he's here or not?
No.
Can the arm be lowered? Top.
Mm-mm, no, it doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yes.
I hear footsteps. I hear footsteps of rescue.
Oh,
that would be better than what we have.
Okay. Yeah, mostly the top one.
Yes,
light
thank
off.
You.
Could we turn the light off?
No, it is off.
It is off.
It
okay.
Is off.
Apparently. Okay. I'll explain it.
If we turn these off, the whole room's dark.
Oh, okay.
But only turn
I'll explain it, and I think most people here are pretty familiar with these. So anyway, the Luba case, one of the assignments of error included Luba 6Ds, 6Es, 6Hs, and 6Is, which in the staff report are exhibits D, E, F, and G, which includes water storage and groundwater, natural resource evaluation, air quality, and aviation, wildlife. And essentially, with those exhibits, they were submitted late in the initial hearing, and the opponents did not have an opportunity to rebut them. So that is the issue in those four instances. The second one is really the natural gas letter that staff submitted after the record was closed, and essentially you have to decide whether to accept or reject that particular submission. If you reject it, you can't use it as justification for your decision one way or the other. However, Luba, and mistakenly in the Luba decision, they cited that natural gas letter as exhibit LLLLL. And it's understandably the way the table was organized, it was very low, so one could easily make that mistake, because it really should be the exhibit KKK, KKK. And I put both of them in the staff report just for comparison's sake, but really the one you need to look at is exhibit H in the staff report, the KKK, KKK one. In addition, the Luba decided that there needed to be a deer and elk impact study, which was submitted by the proponent, and also an EC analysis, which is an economic, social, environmental, and energy analysis. And in this case, this is to establish whether or not future conflicting uses can be established in the surrounding areas, which you could allow fully with no restrictions. You can deny any future development in the, like, say, within 500 feet of the mining operation, which would mean no residential development at all, largely residential. Or you can allow residential development with some sort of restrictions on it. So you have those three choices. Just simply allow any kind of residential development in this case, deny it completely, or modify it somehow. And I might add that if this is approved, it will become a significant aggregate site, in which case there will be a 500-foot buffer, in which case anybody who wants to build a dwelling or replace a dwelling, not the ones that already exist, but new ones or replaced dwellings, the owner would be required to sign more or less a covenant saying they're not going to object or bring a lawsuit against the mine operation, but they would still be able to build. All right, then. So that is essentially the four, but there is actually a fifth one, which is not really referred to, although Commissioner Walker did, which is the county needs to address Josephine County Goal 7 Policy 3. And on this sheet with the tables in the middle, I have cited it. Basically, it's the board needs to support the identification of historic sites. This has already been identified. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. And the board needs to ensure that incompatible uses are not established adjacent to the sites identified. And you need to make sure that they are also protected in some way. So essentially, that is it. Yes?
The primary historic resources, is the bridge considered one of the primary historic resources because it is listed?
Yes. Yes, it is. Any other questions?
Yeah. How does the fact that part of the application and the board's statements that, for approval, the bridge is not to be used. It's not. It's not pertinent to this whole situation.
It has to be addressed one way or another. So essentially,
not using it would assume it would be being addressed.
Right. That's the issue that you need to deliberate amongst yourself about how to interpret that particular goal, as it relates to this activity, this use. I don't have a direct answer because this is something that the board has to determine.
I thought the board had addressed that, and that was part of the hall route was not in that area, did not go across the bridge. The recommendations not to use the bridge, so I'm missing what else do we have to do?
Well, the opposition will, of course, bring up the issues involved about that.
We'll
Luba
discuss
agreed
that.
With
that
them and directed the board to address it. Maybe more completely, I'm not sure. But this was a Luba directive that the board needed to address it in the remand hearing. Any other questions?
I do.
Go ahead.
The letter regarding the natural gas letter, your statement said that we need to recognize that and include it in the record. It seems as though by giving it more than one actual citation, either LL or KK or whatever it is, and now H, it's part of the record. So
that was the Luba language for the board to reject or to deny. So
great.
Quite legalistic. So
yep.
I can't answer that. All right. Now, one other thing, our community development planning director has a statement to make before we go on.
My name's Julie Schmelzer. I'm the director of planning. Just one real quick thing. We have heard some requests for, and Cheryl, you've alluded to it at the beginning of the hearing, to perhaps take information, take a break, come back in 2 weeks, take a break, come back in 2 weeks. From a staff's perspective, we urge you to try and address everything in this one meeting so that we have all the same parties hearing the same information, and to also try to resolve some of the issues that are out there at the current time and move forward with a decision. It's totally up to you whether you decide to postpone the hearing or not, but staff does have the concern that taking information and then allowing people to rebut in writing and come back may not exactly be the fairest option to both parties, but that is something for you to decide as well.
Thank you.
Perhaps we should talk about our proposed schedule for the day. My day is blocked out to be here to deal with this hearing today.
So is mine. Commissioner Heck?
I'm blocked out until 10.
Tomorrow?
whatever it takes to move on to the next step and conclude this, and that I'm in it for the whole run.
Well, I think that I remember quite well when I was in training many, many years ago that the mind can only absorb what the backside can stand. So we will be taking a break occasionally. And then, of course, if we still extend to lunchtime, we will take a lunch break and reconvene this afternoon because we do have the entire day blocked out for this hearing. All right. That all being said, we are going to move forward for the proponents, the applicant's case. As we have determined here, they will have 30 minutes. And so who is going to be making that presentation? Please step forward, state your name and your position, who you represent, and we will start the clock.
Thank you. Chair Walker, members of the board, my name is Corinne Selko with Emerge.
Excuse me just a minute. Move that microphone a little closer to you. It's not picking up very well.
Is our person still back there?
Yeah, I think they have to give them a little lead time to.
Yeah, we can just hold on a minute.
Is he still there? Ask him to. He can increase the volume.
You have to speak first, and then they adjust it as we speak. So.
Yeah, okay. All right, start over. Go ahead.
Chair Walker, members of the board, my name is Corinne Selko with Emerge Law Group. I'm here on behalf of the applicant, Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel, Inc. First, let me start off with addressing some of the comments made by staff. First, thank you, Ms. Silverberg, for directing us to the issues that are here before us today based on the remand by LUBA. Ms. Silverberg did a great job of explaining the limited scope of this hearing. I just have a couple of things to add to the record. First of all, in Exhibit J, which is the Northwest Resource Solutions Deer and Elk Impact Study Report, with that report, we also submitted an EC analysis, not for the conflicting use EC analysis, but there is a specific EC analysis related to the consequences of truck impact on deer and elk. We have copies here today, too, to distribute if those weren't received. But in the email that I had sent with the Northwest Resource Solutions Deer and Elk report, there was also an EC analysis for that purpose. So I'd like to add that to the record in Exhibit J. I'd also like to point out that in Exhibit J, which is the Northwest Resource Solutions report, the first page of that report appears to be missing, and it appears to be included as Exhibit A5. So if we could switch Exhibit A5 to the first page of Exhibit J.
Do we have A5? I don't see an Exhibit A5. I have Exhibit J, the Deer and Elk Impact Study.
I have one on right here.
Page.
It's the last page of Exhibit A. And it seems as though it makes sense to go.
It's Exhibit A?
Just exactly what she said. It's in Exhibit A, and it's the first page of Exhibit J.
Well, she was saying an attachment to Exhibit J. Okay. Okay, it's not a separate A. Yeah. It's not a separate exhibit. Thank you. Thank you for the clarification.
Sure.
We do have it. Thank you.
Okay.
Got a letterhead that matches all of the rest of Exhibit J, so.
Great.
That's great. Okay. I'm not so sure that administrative things are really part of her time.
So, that's okay. I just wanted, she was referring to an exhibit I wasn't sure we had. So
I just
want to
make sure that the record's clear.
No, I know that, and I think you clarifying the record isn't necessarily should be used against your 30 minutes for clarifying the record.
Thank you, Commissioner.
That's kind of our mistake, and I appreciate you bringing that to our attention.
We have our clock person here taking care of that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Again, maybe kind of a housekeeping matter. I'd like to address a letter that was raised. I'm not entirely sure who wrote the letter because I didn't see it signed, but there was a letter that was incorporated into the record discussing potential bias by Commissioner Heck and Commissioner Hare. If you've been able to take a look at that, I'd like to address that.
So I read your letter. I did not receive any letter to precede your clarification.
Okay. Well, if I might just spend 2 minutes on it, then we may return to this during the rebuttal phase, but I'd like to take this moment to simply address that. And the way I'll address it simply is to say that the law is that commissioners are not expected to be completely free of all bias and prejudice. Everybody has biases and prejudices. As LUBA has stated in the case that I included in my letter dated July 17th, 2016, as elected officials, you all have opinions. Everyone recognizes you have opinions, and likely you are voted into office because of those opinions. So the requirement is not that you be free of all bias. The requirement is that you are able to put those biases aside when confronted with an application like this, and that you make your decision based on the facts and the application of law to those facts. And we're here today to talk about those facts. So any suggestion that because of any pre-hearing comments that may that could be conceived to me to show some sort of bias towards the applicant is not any means for recusal in this case. Moving on to the remand issues. As Ms. Zilberg has stated, the hearing today is limited in scope to the issues listed on the remand hearing issues
paper that was displayed here on the overhead. At the outset, I'd just like to say that the Luba opinion, Luba did not, in remanding this decision, Luba did not predetermine any outcome of this remand hearing. In other words, Luba did not suggest that the decision, the outcome of the decision that you came to before was wrong in and of itself. All Luba is saying is that there are certain procedures that needed to have taken place, and this was largely a procedural remand. The first issue on remand was that there were four expert letters that were submitted into the record below, and those are listed here as staff report exhibit D, E, F, and G. And Luba has stated that the opponents should have an opportunity to respond to those letters. And so that's what we're here to do today. And we'll hear from the opponents later today. Luba also stated that there was a natural gas pipeline letter submitted into the record by staff, and that either the board needs to specifically reject that letter, or if the board wishes to accept the letter and rely on that letter in its findings, that it needs to give the opponents the opportunity to respond to that letter. And that's what we're here to do today as well. As a procedural matter, Luba also stated that the board should have conducted an EC analysis of future conflicting uses. So for the application, one of the things that we looked at during the application phase were potential conflicting uses that the mine would impact. So for example, we looked at whether the mine would impact Goal 5 resources. The EC analysis that Luba is talking about in the remand is a separate and different EC analysis. This analysis is where we look at, we assume that the mine is in place, and we look at whether or not there are any future uses that may conflict with the mine. And the board's decision is whether or not to allow any future conflicting uses that may conflict with the mine. This is a policy decision by the board. It's purely a policy decision about whether to allow the mine and prevent any future conflicting uses, whether to allow all future conflicting uses, even if they conflict with the mine, or to limit those conflicting uses and perhaps add some mitigation measures. We have submitted into the record a draft EC analysis that goes through the positive and negative consequences for your consideration. That is not the final findings, and that's not the final EC analysis. The EC analysis that you put together needs to take into consideration what the opponents say today and what else may be put in the record. And all of those considerations taken together will be drafted in those findings for the EC analysis, and that is the analysis that Luba is requiring. Also, from a procedural standpoint, Luba stated that the issue of truck impact on deer and elk was not adequately addressed. So in Exhibit J, the applicant has submitted an analysis from Northwest Resource Solutions that describes the potential impact of truck traffic on deer and elk. And as you'll see when you read it, it explains that given the size of the impact area, the short haul route, and the estimated size of deer and elk populations within the vicinity of the project area, the impact on deer and elk is found to be not significant. The report also proposed mitigation measures. So despite the impact of truck traffic on deer and elk being not significant, the report still suggested proposed mitigation measures to help even further lower the proposed risk to deer and elk. The first mitigation measure would be to post deer and elk warning signs along the haul route. And the second mitigation measure would be to require reduced speed limits in the area. Again, as part of this submittal, the applicant submitted an EC analysis looking at the positive and negative consequences of either allowing the mine to remain and not making any dispensation for deer and elk, for preventing the mine in favor of deer and elk, or in limiting the use of the mine and adopting the mitigation measures set forth in the report. Again, this is a policy choice by the board. You may choose to determine whether to allow the mine, prevent the mine, or limit the uses of the mine. The last two issues raised by Luba were that the board did not make adequate findings in basing its justification for allowing a use inconsistent with the surrounding area on the market supply and demand for aggregate in the area. Luba did not make a decision on what your disposition should be in that. All Luba was saying was that the board failed to make adequate findings in that area. So this is a matter to be dealt with in the findings. The applicant is more than happy to assist in drafting those proposed findings for the board's consideration, but this is a findings issue for the board to consider and address whether or not the justification for allowing a use inconsistent with the surrounding area is based on market supply and demand of aggregate. Lastly, Luba remanded on the basis that the board did not make adequate findings in addressing County 7 Policy 3, which Ms. Silverberg listed here in her remand hearing issues list. And that policy is with regard to impacts to the historic Graves Creek Covered Bridge. Again, this is purely a findings issue. This remand requires additional written findings by the board, and the applicant is willing to assist in drafting those findings for your consideration. Again, these are the only issues that are before the board today, narrowed in scope, and I'd be happy to take any questions or reserve the rest of this time for rebuttal.
Commissioner Hare?
Item, so as a housekeeping element, I think we all need to turn our cell phones off. item number 5, which is the market supply and demand for aggregate, and that the board didn't find adequate findings for that. What kind of information is the applicant prepared to provide to bolster that argument that aggregate is a necessary element or that it isn't being supplied by the current producers within the area? That's an important factor that I think you could probably review.
Sure. We're happy to provide that kind of information from experts or otherwise in testimony. The issue that Luba cited was not necessarily the adequacy of the evidence or not, but with whether or not that issue was adequately addressed in findings. So in preparing draft findings to address that issue is another way that the applicant can help and assist in resolving that Luba remand issue.
Okay, so you're planning on addressing that in expert testimony?
We can address that in expert testimony, or we can address that simply in the findings.
I think, excuse me, Commissioner Hare, this is your opportunity to rebut the letters and to present evidence and testimony in regard, of course right now evidence, from you in regards to these issues that Luba has remanded it on. I don't think it's appropriate for us to wait and say, well, you're going to help us draft the findings of the findings of fact when we need to hear it today as to what those will be. We need to know what your arguments are to rebut these, specifically the letters, and to present the evidence on the deer winter range and on the bridge. We need to hear that.
That's what I'm looking for. Because when we come out of this hearing, and I mean, if there's a motion made by any member of the board one way or the other, the decisions for those are fairly well articulated in the motion on any one of these six items. And so I think it's really the applicant's burden of proof to provide those further clarity on what Luba is requesting.
Just to clarify Chair Walker's comment about rebutting letters, can you let me know which letters that you're referring to rebut?
The letters
the reasons that LUBA remanded it was because there was no opportunity for the other parties to rebut the letters.
No, no, that was not my point. That's the first element of error. I'm talking about element five, and it just stating that we have an inadequacy in our findings.
Sure.
I'm really looking for those points that you're going to... I can't allow the applicant to provide findings and then have a disagreement with those findings when they're proposed to draft.
Okay, sure.
So
I understand. Commissioner Herr, just give me 1 minute. I'll get back to that. Yeah. Commissioner Walker, I just want to...
So what we're looking for is, because the letters were presented and there was really not much discussion, apparently. I didn't participate in those hearings, so I don't know. So, but there was no opportunity for the other party to rebut the letters.
Right.
So the purpose of submitting the letters was obviously on your part, the statement was in support of testimony you had already given. But then there was also the deer issue and the bridge issue, and you've submitted information. There's information on those as well. And I think for the record, even though we have those letters in here, now would be the time for you to state or clarify or otherwise argue in regards to those issues.
Okay, so to clarify, the applicant submitted those four expert letters.
Correct, you did. But what I want to know is you submitted the letters, and they're quite long letters, quite lengthy, in other words. So what was the salient point in each of those that you were trying to make? Because we're going to ask the other parties, because the allegation and what LUBA found was that there was at least one point of new information in there. And I would like to know if that is your position as well, or why you put them in, or what was your defense, or what case were you trying to make with those letters? And I see that, for instance, on the one, the water storage and groundwater and natural resource evaluation, air quality and avian wildlife. Is there anything that you wish to put into the record at this time in addition to those letters, or just make that statement, the letter stands on its own, so that when we go to the
sure.
other side for rebuttal, they have something that they're talking about as far as rebuttal.
Sure. The applicant put those letters in the record below as a final argument. Those letters were from our experts to simply summarize the findings and the points and the testimony argument that those experts had made previously. They were not intended to include any new evidence. However, LUBA found that by the mere fact that they are experts opining on the matter, LUBA found that those count as, quote unquote, new evidence. So those letters stand on their own. In our view, they're summarizing points that were made previously, and all LUBA is saying is that the opponents have a chance to respond to those letters.
Thank you.
I have
appreciate
nothing more to
statement.
Add on those letters. Thank
right.
you.
Okay.
Commissioner Herr, with regard to the justification and demand for aggregate, in the board's findings below, the board found three justifications for why inconsistent uses were allowed in the area. And the third of those justifications was based on market demand and supply of aggregate. The applicant's position is that the other two justifications sufficiently address the issue. In other words, those other two justifications supply the reason, the justification, the basis for allowing inconsistent uses in the area. We don't need the third justification of market demand and supply for aggregate. All LUBA was saying was that because that was listed as a justification and it wasn't clear in the board's findings whether or not each justification stood on their own or was taken in the aggregate, they needed to remand that back. So my suggestion would be to simply rely exclusively on the first two justifications, each one separately on their own, as reasons that the board can find that approval criterion is met.
Thank you. That was the clarifying point I was hoping to hear.
Sure.
Anything else?
Yep. Okay. Can you provide some clarity on how the board can address item number six? I think going to Commissioner Heck's point of we've restricted the haul route from utilizing the covered bridge. I don't know if there are other measures done. This is not the only covered bridge in the state of Oregon that's in proximity to natural resources. I can think of three up north in the Roseburg area that are obviously on haul routes for logging operations. that's pretty intuitive, but I just don't know what else one could do. I have talked as liaison because we've seen, for other issues, we've seen logging trucks, and so looking at perhaps a height restriction that could be delineated, so that would probably cut out larger trucks, or people with RVs, it's the other thing, but it cuts both ways. Is there a recommendation from the applicant on how we can adequately address Goal 7, Policy 3?
Well, Commissioner Harris, the applicant stated below and in the findings below by the board, Commissioner Heck was correct. The haul route does not cross the covered bridge. And in analyzing the uses that are next to the covered bridge, our findings, the applicant's argument and the board's findings found that the decision didn't need to be about any tourists visiting the Graves Creek site or anything like that. This was solely about whether or not uses established adjacent to the historic site had any negative impact. And what Luba had said was that Luba did not have any problem with the board's findings in that regard. What Luba had said was that the board did not specifically address Goal 7, Policy 3. So, in other words, I think that the board's findings were adequate and can stand. It's simply that Goal 7, Policy 3 was not specifically cited in the findings, nor were those findings directed specifically at Goal 7, Policy 3. And so, again, I think it's a findings issue that can resolve the Luba issue.
Tying those elements together. Okay. I don't know that I'm done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is there any reason why we would not want to include the natural gas letter that you can speculate? I mean, that was not presented by the applicant. That was presented by staff. And really, it's kind of outside. I don't know. I don't know that it was specifically requested on behalf of the board. I found it helpful, but at the same time, it opened up an opportunity that we did not grant to the opponents for a response. But I really think that it's this is your application, your case, and if there's something that you didn't want to, we shouldn't be coming up with stuff on our own unless that's part of the applicant's request.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner Hare. I would just add that the board's findings below did not specifically rely on nor cite that letter. So to the
I did make a statement, if I remember, or maybe it was you. I don't know.
I'll figure it out.
No. Someone on the board did reference at the hearing,
at
maybe
the hearing.
Not specified in the findings or reference, but the idea that if the owners of this facility were not necessarily concerned, it's their infrastructure, it's their asset, you'd think that they would be. However, there is a recommendation in the response for some mitigation measures that could be pretty important. Is there a statement from the applicant as to whether or not they're receptive to those conditions?
The applicant's position is that the findings themselves, I can't remember exactly all of the comments that were made at the hearing, but the applicant's position is that the board's findings themselves did not rely on nor cite that letter as necessary for reaching the conclusions that they reached. So the applicant's position is that that letter can and should be rejected.
Is one of the covered bridge issues.
Okay. Does the applicant have any witnesses they wish to present? Okay.
in going back to clarifying the record, may I submit the EC on the impact on deer and elk into the record?
We were discussing how to number these. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. We entered it as applicant's exhibit one. And so this would be, of course, just how you see this. Is this the one that was attached?
Yes, if I may clarify, this.
I was going to say, I read this somewhere.
This should be included with Exhibit J, if possible.
Okay.
It goes
okay,
with.
I read this then. Thank you. I started to look at it, and I'm going, I think I've read this already. I did.
Excuse me. We would like to, and legal counsel would like to, just clarify how the board is labeling the exhibits. Like, it was going A to Z and then AA, which was confusing, and
okay,
we talked about
we
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, what we were talking about here is that we have the applicant and we have the opponent, so we're going to start with A, and that'll be starting with numbers, and then the opponent O with numbers.
I see.
That way we'll know who entered it just by looking at the number.
I see. Okay,
that
thank
work
you.
Work for you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Question, if I can.
Yes.
We have under Exhibit J a letter from Northwest Resource Solutions. Now we're handed this one. These are identical in content, aren't they? I'm wondering why the reason or the necessity of having. I mean, the formatting is somewhat different, but the text is the same, I'm thinking, is it?
So there are two, there should be two separate EC analyses. And my view of the staff report and packet was that under Exhibit J, with the report from Northwest Resource Solutions, there was a draft EC analysis of the truck impact on deer and elk. And that EC analysis appeared to be missing from what I saw. So I just wanted to make sure that you actually had that in the record and that it was put into Exhibit J with the analysis from Northwest Resource Solutions.
Okay, so this is not necessarily redundant. This is a new addition.
That should be a new addition. There's a separate EC analysis that is for the analysis of future conflicting uses, and that should have its own exhibit number.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Got it?
Got it.
All right. Pardon? Okay. This one. Right. Are there any others in favor? Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, just to clarify, Exhibit K should be an EC analysis, but it should be the EC analysis for future conflicting uses. They do look somewhat similar because they're both EC analyses, and so the formatting is the same, but the first paragraph should explain, or the first two sentences should explain that one EC analysis is for future conflicting uses is, and one is for truck impact on deer and elk.
Gotcha.
All right. Do you have any others in favor that wish to speak on this issue? All right. Any other questions from our staff? No? Any other questions to staff? All right. Moving on to the opponents, who will have 30 minutes. If you'll come to the podium, state your name, your position, the name of who you represent, and you will have 30 minutes. And this is where you have the opportunity to, per the LUBA remand, to rebut those letters and to provide testimony and evidence on the other deer winter range and the historic preservation issue.
Good morning, commissioners. Steve Rouse. I'm representing Rogue Advocates this morning. It'll take me a few minutes to get set up. I had a housekeeping issue to start with, maybe, and then if we could take just a short break, maybe 2-3 minutes, it would help me.
Just go ahead and start setting up, and I think we need to read through our notes anyway. Do you want to read through your notes while he's setting up?
I'm happy to hear the housekeeping issue that helps you set up.
Okay. The housekeeping issue is about the ex parte contact or bias that was referred to earlier. Did the commissioners receive a letter that was submitted to the planning director on July 14th regarding this issue?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes, I did, I think.
Okay. So the intent of that letter was not to create a formal accusation of ex parte contact or bias. I think you're familiar with that occurred in the Brimstone hearing when one commissioner was recused. The question was simply raised because we've been presented with information of contacts or comments made about this application over the last 2 years, we just wanted to clarify from your perspective that you can be a fair and biased board. And because at the start of this hearing, there was no discussion about the ex parte contact and stuff, I would appreciate if the board would take the opportunity to address any contact that did occur, if you feel like you can be unbiased, etc. That's our only request.
I think this is probably not the appropriate time to do so, but the fact that we needed to go through that is probably pretty key. There was a letter submitted. It textually referenced Commissioner Heck's statements. There was a DVD apparently accompanied with that text, but it was unable to be read by anybody's computer, I guess. So nobody's really gotten an opportunity to see if there was something on that substantial. I think also referencing under the rules and procedures that the time to challenge the board or for the board to kind of say that we weren't going to, didn't feel comfortable proceeding as passed. But there was also something referenced that I had said at a weekly business session, but there was no text assigned to that about what was said. So I'm really not sure about what in reference. I think aggregate is important. I think I've made those kinds of statements at a weekly business session before. If it was different than that, I'd hope to have the opportunity to clarify what those statements were in reference to. But I don't believe that I'm going to be biased in this hearing here today. We have six elements to review, and I'm gonna participate to the best of my ability. So if that's what you were looking for, Mr. Rouse.
Perfect. Commissioner Hare, thank you very much.
As Commissioner Hare said, there was a letter and a CD or a DVD that came in, and we were unable to open it, so we don't know what it said. The letter, of course, didn't make any specific allegation, and I didn't participate in the previous hearings, and I will state for the record that I'm liaison to the airports. Mr. Bleck is on the airport board, but the only interaction we have at the airport board is airport business, so that's the only connection that I have with parties. So, okay.
I think it is, and also, Madam Chair, it is important to clarify the element of bias is a self-determination judgment. The element of ex parte is a decision, well, either made by that hearing, the commissioner or the board, as it was done in the Brimstone case. So those that were referenced were biased, and so those are a decision made by each individual commissioner, just for clarification on that, because that wasn't specific.
We need to turn off our cell phones.
Yeah, everybody.
That's a nice ringtone.
Well, after that moment of recess, Mr. Rouse.
You need more time to set up. You said you needed 2 or 3 minutes to set up.
Okay, is that intended to be an exhibit? Would be exhibit one. Yeah, I'm going to have him do that.
I'll start my presentation now. One last housekeeping thing. We anticipated this exhibit thing and tried to keep things clear for staff. So we have not labeled any of our exhibits yet. We'll need a little bit of time probably at the end of the hearing to keep things organized for you, staff, when we submit things to clearly keep them labeled, because
to label this one as your exhibit one.
O-1? Right. I understand the system now, so that's great.
And I'd just like to apologize that you are not featured with a table, as this is a different thing than the regular hearing, because it's just two parties. It's just you guys and just the applicant, and that's a shortcoming on our part.
So. That's, yeah, appreciate that. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
So Steve Rouse, Rogue Advocates. We will be addressing a number of the issues that were presented by staff as subject from the remand proceeding from LUBA. I'm going to start with, these don't necessarily fall in a specific order because a lot of the letters or subjects are intertwined. So I'm going to start with the rebuttal of exhibit, or letter 6Ds, letter 6Es, and a little bit to do with the ESE analysis of Goal 5 riparian resources. That may not have been included specifically in the list that Grace gave you, but LUBA was very specific that issue was not resolved. The issue of riparian resources was, let me find it here. It was the first sub-assignment of the third assignment of error to LUBA. And basically what LUBA said was, we will not attempt to resolve this issue because the letters contain information about riparian resources. It would be premature for us to resolve this issue, and so we will let it stand. So basically, and the letters, and that's specifically what I'll be addressing in the letters, is the references to riparian resources and that part of the site that includes riparian resources, which is the floodplain and floodway. So that's the subject that I will be addressing first. And sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees. And God works in mysterious ways. Two very common sayings. We're over 5,000 pages of exhibits and arguments and testimony in this, and it's taken a long time to absorb this stuff and see a few trees instead of being blinded by the forest. That's the first thing I'll say. A lot of the information that Mike and I will be presenting today are not our own ideas or research. The community has come together and researched an amazing amount of details, and so I credit the community and take little credit for what we're presenting today. I have handed you a sheet that's in the file. It's Exhibit K, which is an engineering flood study. And we employed or hired an engineering consultant Mr. Tim Bossard, to evaluate the floodplain work that was done on this site. And he came up with some very interesting conclusions that we will submit in a formal letter from him. And basically what you're seeing, I don't know if you can see it too well on this map. I'll try to explain this to the audience. But the Grave Creek floodplain is basically this edge of the dark line. That is what is identified on this plan as the floodplain of Grave Creek. This broad line that you see here, the black line, was plotted onto this exhibit by our engineer Bossard, and that reflects the actual FEMA regulatory floodplain. How did he figure that out? Well, he's an engineer. He plotted it, for one thing, doing an overlay on the map. But it's explained in the fine print on the general notes of this sheet up in the upper left-hand corner. And the engineer states, in note 5, the FEMA 100-year boundary not shown is based on the elevation of the A-zone maps from FEMA, blah, blah, blah. Our study, note 6, our study does not alter the firm zone A boundary. The firm zone boundary may be amended by applying to FEMA and satisfying the requirements of the amendment. So what you have is an application, and also I'll point out down here where this is Shanks Creek right here running through, and that line is the floodplain of Shanks Creek. What's depicted on the map submitted by the applicant is that narrow little section of Shanks Creek is called the floodplain. So the floodplain is actually over 120 feet wider on either side of Shanks Creek than depicted on the plan. And so in order to really evaluate riparian resources, it's impossible with this information. The letters submitted, letters triple or 6Ds and 6Es, refer to jurisdictional waters, regulatory boundaries. And they're referring, we thought, to the floodplain boundaries on the map, and that's what's drawn. But those are not the regulatory floodplain boundaries until a formal process, which is explained in our engineer's letter, is formally submitted to FEMA and adopted by Josephine County. So basically, if this site was approved as is, the county would be in violation of allowing development within the floodplain. That's our first point, big point. Secondly, and more important, is the floodway, the definition of the floodway. Now, let me explain. It's pretty technical, but a little technical. The FEMA firm maps depict an approximate floodplain which demarks the base flood elevation in a 100-year flood. That's what that line is that's drawn. In this particular FEMA map, they did not, which was revised in 2009, by the way, they did not provide a detailed evaluation of the floodway. That is, the floodway is defined as where the real force of the flood goes in a flood. And so the engineer had to provide a no-rise analysis, which he did, to define what that floodway is. And so he does a lot of cross-sections, topography, and determines what the floodway is. Throughout the application, they state there is no development in the floodway. The bridge crosses Grave Creek, but they state that the bridge abutments and fill behind the abutments are not in the floodway. Here's another sheet titled Site Plan Access Road from Thornton Engineering, titled Sheet C1. And this is the bridge. And as you can see, the dotted lines that go to the bridge are the flood plain, and they also are, at least on the north side, define the flood way on his map. If you look at the topography, now the floodway will follow topography. Water is just going to rise up to a certain elevation. That's just what it does. And if you look at the north side, you can see the topography lines up here basically flatten out in this reach. Normally, the floodplain line would, water would just find that path right there. That obviously is not the case here. And what we're looking at is essentially an as-built drawing of what the flood way and flood plain will be after construction. Now, you can build a bridge like this, but you need to ask FEMA's permission. You need to apply for a LOMA, letter of map amendment, or a LOMAR, a letter of map revision. And our engineer goes into the details of why that is. So, if you look at this cross-section of the bridge, which is the clear site in the middle, you see on either side of those bridge abutments fill. The applicant states there's no fill in the flood way. But there is. There's fill, there's riprap, and there's bridge abutments. And that's fine, you can do that. But you have to follow a procedure. If the county approved the plan as is, and I know there's going to be more technical drawings for the bridge development, but if you're approving a conceptual site plan and you're allowing this to happen, you're violating federal law and you're putting the county in jeopardy of their flood insurance status with FEMA, because that is not allowed unless you revise the FEMA maps. In the TSI letters and the Shannon and Wilson letters, they consistently refer to being outside jurisdictional boundaries of DSL, Army Corps. That is not the case of what they've submitted. I think that's we have extensive written comments on this that we will submit to you, more detailed. Hope you can understand them clearly, but I think you get the gist of the point. Okay, so that's all. How much time do I have, Mike? Okay.
Well, yeah.
I'm trying to give Mike 15 minutes here.
Thank you.
Okay.
Like
enough of this. Very quickly, the other topic I'm going to address is the justification of supply, demand, and quality of rock that was briefly mentioned by the applicant. In the finding, and this goes to RLDC 46.040D2, which is basically, if you're going to allow inconsistent uses in a surrounding area, you need to justify that. And Luba said, one of the things they said was that the applicant has not clarified what the degree of inconsistency is. And the code reads, the burden of proof is greater if the inconsistency of the use of mining compared to a rural residential area is great. And that's up to the commissioners to decide that balance. But without information regarding how inconsistent the use is, which was not provided in the findings, it's very difficult to judge what's fair, what's just. That's one thing. Okay, secondly, in the findings, the board approved three principles that justify the use. One, the site is rich in high-quality aggregate. Two, there's a lack of permitted sites. And three, and most importantly, as they say in the findings, the site will meet the demand for aggregate resources in the county. Now, at this point, we're going to kind of mix things up, but I would like to introduce our expert witness, engineering geologist Dr. Jim Rodine, and he will address all three of these issues, and then I will come back with further, if that's all right with the board. It makes sense to, if we have a topic with a witness, we'd like to stay on the topic and then go to something else. It's up to you guys.
You still have 11 minutes.
What's that?
You still have 11 minutes.
11 minutes, okay.
Okay, did you wish to be, all right. Because you did not address some of the other issues?
We'll address some other issues, exactly, and summarize justification. And I need
your
to give Mike time,
too. Expert witnesses will be addressing those?
What's that?
Your expert witnesses will be addressing the other issues? You will not be doing that. I'm just saying, you still have time
I'll
to
introduce
address those.
I'll introduce the experts briefly.
Any way you want to.
Okay.
I just want to make sure
thank
that you
so
understood
Dr.
you
Jim,
had still had time.
Dr. Jim Rodine graduated a few years ago from Stanford, I think about over 40 years ago. His specialty is in debris flow. Brilliant man. I'll leave it at that. Dr. Jim Rodine.
Thank you, Steve. Jim Rodine, 294 Edgerton, Sunny Valley.
Would you please spell your last name?
R-O-D-I-N-E. And I have actually some pictures and text if you'd like to have a copy.
Yes. If you'll submit them to the parties here.
Yeah, the basic issue, I believe, before us is that is there a need for this kind of aggregate in Sunny Valley in Josephine County? And what I did is I went to, well, in my handout, there's a reference to how this is done. And basically, the government keeps track of production. It has all the producers on an annual basis. They send a reference in as to the production they've had during that year in the different marketing areas. And then there's if you take that total production, divide it by the number of people in the United States, you get a use per person. I took that statistic, applied it to this county, and we came up with, I can't find, about 645,000 yards. Well, that sounds like a lot of use in this county on an annual basis. So I looked at production in the Sunny Valley area. There are quite a few, there are a lot more people in Josephine County than there are in Sunny Valley. If you take the Sunny Valley number using the 7.5 yards per year, you get plus or minus 500 cubic yards annually in the Sunny Valley area. It goes up, it goes down when they build the freeway or repairs, it goes up when it rains a lot or whatever, then it goes down. So, and then if you take that number and you look at, there are at least three permitted quarries in the county in Sunny Valley. One's the Steam Beer Mine, the Brimstone, and the Biencourt properties. So those three combined easily have a million cubic yards of resources.
Excuse me, what was the first one?
The first Steam Beer Mine. So if you take a million yards of resources and divide it by the 5,000 yards annual consumption, you've got 200 years of resource in Sunny Valley right now. Permitted resources. So I would say that it's not worth having another resource developed on the and if you look at my documents, you'll see, I think it's the last page, the Steam Beer, Brimstone, and Biencourt properties are all west of the freeway. The proposed Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel is east of the freeway. And three sides of the Sunny Valley property is 5-acre minimums for residential use. So your platting, if approved, you would plat a sand and gravel operation that would have, well, they could sell, but they have a very limited market based on historic numbers. The operations that are in existence right now more than satisfy the demand. Plus, they have reserves that will outlast all of us for sure, and our kids as well. The other thing that I wish to address was the property has a lot of serpentine on it. The serpentine runs in a basically northeast southwest direction. On Sexton Mountain, it goes up over the hill, goes to the Greenback Mine. Serpentine is known to be a hazard to people. It has small, like little glass-like crystals in it, microscopic almost, but if it gets in the dust in the air, that it gets in a person's system and it silicosis basically and they die. That would be a very large hazard for development of this property. It would take extreme care to be able to mine it. You couldn't have any dust. You'd have to cover your trucks. You wouldn't want that dust going up and down the highways or on the freeway, for that matter. It could be a very, very serious situation. That's it in a nutshell. If you have any questions, be happy to answer them.
Mr. Walker? I have just a couple. I think the current quantity is important, but also the future productive quantities used. So mm-hmm. I think we have Grants Pass. His population forecast model is 1.2% per year because mm-hmm. Of the last urban growth boundary we did. So that needs to be considered in there. And the specs and the quality of those other mines in the area, I imagine, I don't know that you can speculate whether or not if Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel's specs meet, that you could just extrapolate and say, because the geology changes so dramatically, it would be really tough to tell. But I think the spec and quality is also a really important element of the other aggregate operations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, the three on the west side are all ODOT approved.
Okay.
I don't know about this Sunny Valley Sand and Gravel.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
You bet.
Thank you.
Very briefly to recap on the justifications, the findings did cite three reasons. The applicant this morning attempted to argue that you only need one of those reasons to justify the mine. But if the quality of the rock is in question, that's pretty essential. If there's serpentine rock with cristatile asbestos in it, that is a problem. In the record, you will find that we submitted a test of soil from right above the site on public land. It came back positive for cristallite asbestos. It is known to be there. Dr. Rudin's written testimony will provide information that since 1924, serpentine has been known. It's mapped on the site. It's mapped on the Ogami maps in 1976. The area right above the site on Shanks Creek, where the debris flow came down over this land, the serpentine soil is visible due to the lack of vegetation, very difficult for anything to grow in the stuff. So the quality is very much in question. And even if there is a demand for the aggregate, there are other sources. There's plenty of sources. As an example, when Sexton Summit was, a third lane was added just a couple years ago and the whole I-5 was repaved in that area, Knife River won the contract, they were offered free rock from ODOT from a quarry at the north end of Grants Pass. Instead, it was more cost-effective for them to just scoop up their riverine deposits from Blackwell Road, truck it to Grants Pass, process it into asphalt, and truck it up to Sexton Summit. That distance is 16 miles from their quarry to Grants Pass. That's a very viable source, obviously, for work around Grants Pass. So it's not just quarries in Josephine County that need to be accounted for. It's definitely those sources out at Blackwell Road. Transportation, the average, this is in Dr. Rodine's report, transportation adds a significant cost to aggregate expenses. The rough industry standard is 20 to 25 miles doubles the cost of aggregate. So if you have a resource in Sunny Valley that is 16 miles from the quarry to the North Grants Pass off-ramp, that's an expensive truck compared to other sources that are very local, and it's equivalent to these giant resources in Jackson County. I'm going to give Mike some time here. Thank you. One last thing. We do, Rogue Advocates does request that the record be left open to respond to the new ESEE submittal by the applicant. Also, our attorney is submitting, we will be submitting today, it's about a 10-page report from our attorney. Unfortunately, both of our attorneys had previous engagements when we found out the date of this hearing. That's why we're on our own today. But they will be submitting information, and I think it's prudent that the board have time to consider and read professional opinions from Engineer Bassard, Dr. Rodin, and our attorney so that you can fairly evaluate the information in light of the compliance with code. So I do request that the record be left open, and I'm very much in agreement with what was suggested in the applicant's letter, a 14-day period for written comments, and they get the last word.
Still 2 minutes left.
Good morning.
Mr. Ross's time.
My name is William Corcoran. I'm representing William Corcoran and Elizabeth Corcoran. I'm here today to talk a little bit about some of the issues under the remand. I would like to establish myself as a public safety expert and establishing that I'm a public safety expert through my extensive experience through the LA City Fire Department and the extensive training that I've had with petrochemical fires, petrochemical firefighting, and people in the business. And this is to address the gas pipeline that runs through Mr. Bleck's property. When I research just a simple letter from Williams Pipeline, I see that everything is, nothing is solid. Everything is, has promised, has committed to provide, will be, proposed roads, everything will be there. There's nothing that's really a solid fact that this is what they're going to do. We're going to work together and we're going to get it done type of an attitude. There's a lot of unknowns in it, and they say they'll work it out later. Well, it's hard to make a decision in public safety on what we're going to agree to later. Just a simple aspect of the pipeline stands for itself. In the pipeline's brochures, they talk about probably the most common cause of disruption of gas lines is digging. But that goes without being said. That's pretty obvious and common sense. And in their letter, they state they have three valves that are located. One is 14 miles in one way, 13 miles the other, and there's another valve on site. These are manual valves. At first, and to a layman, they would think that the valve on site is a positive. On the contrary, is it a negative? It's an exposure, and it's the most evident exposure because it's above ground. we're operating, Mr. Bleck will be operating heavy equipment, be operating all kinds of vehicles around that valve. And in my extensive experience and places I've been to, and very large fires that are nationally known, the cause were vehicles striking pipelines and valves, or human error. But mainly one of the biggest fires in Los Angeles, the Gatex fire, it was in a loading dock, which an experienced truck driver with safety training struck a pipe and killed people and hurt over 100 firefighters. Things happen. Accidents happen. This is what we, this is what put me in business for 37 years. So to bring out just a bottom line to bring it forward to you is this is a public safety factor. This is an issue that will tap resources statewide. You have valves that are, if that valve is damaged, we're talking about 27 miles of 10-inch gas line, 700 PSI. We do not know. I've talked to your fire marshal. I've talked to your private fire departments. They're all being trained, but very very minutely, but they're being trained in a classroom and instructed on properly how to handle these fires, but they don't have the resources for it. We do not, we haven't got any information from Williams on where their response, emergency response teams are located and how they get, how they go to the valves and shut the valves off. If they go to the two separate valves that are 14, 13 miles away, there's still a lot of gas left in that pipe. They will bring an emergency response team to the site, but how long? What does it take? This jeopardizes our valley because we have a narrow valley. We have winds that go up and down the valley, and it will create a large gas cloud. If we're lucky, it will ignite. If we're unlucky, it won't. And that causes another issue. So much for the pipeline. I think I've made it clear, and I'll submit a little bit more information. And then I wanted to address the wildlife issue and the deer and elk study that Mr. Black has put into. And I'm just, I'm kind of like a common sense person. I just kind of look at it, and I read their report, their expert report. And in their report, they state that the impact area of the
Mr. Cochran,
elk and
deer.
Sorry,
we do need to acknowledge that your time is over.
Okay, no, what I instructed our secretary to do is that he used up the remainder of his time, and then we started the clock for his time as a witness, 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think that, if you guys are aware,
yeah.
Reorganizing your
yeah.
expert testimony
So we allowed you to use the remainder of his time,
I
and then
totally
start.
Agree with that. But everybody needs to know, including the applicant, that the last little bit, maybe 5 minutes, on the expert element should have been, and then now you're speaking. As
now I'm speaking as the other guy.
But it's just switched around. That sounds great. Okay.
Are we good? Go.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
We have the clock running.
Just
we have.
This
we
is
watching that.
This
for
is
us.
Tough for a simple firefighter. You know.
Thank you.
On the wildlife, I just took the statistics that the expert said, and his impact area is 1,300 feet of Placer Road. That's 6/10 of a mile. The haul route doesn't just entail 6/10 of a mile. The haul route includes from where he enters Placer Road all the way to the freeway. If you approximately it's 4 miles. If you take the fact that in his expert, they estimate approximately 0 to 2 elk annually will be hit in the 0.6 mile area of Placer Road. Let's take an average of 1 elk. If it's 0 to 2, average would be 1. We approximately are 6 2/3 more road to exist going to the freeway. So now we're talking about 6 2/3 elk annually hit on Placer Road, not just in the 0.6 miles that Mr. Bleck's talking about. We have a herd approximately of 25 and 30. It fluctuates. We're a little bit less than 25 right now. And 6 2/3 elk annually is devastating to a herd that size. And eventually, it would just eliminate the herd completely. If we took the worst case scenario and it was 2 elk per year, and we multiply it out, now we're at over 12, 13 elk. That's over half the herd right now. So it is devastating to our elk herd. The deer, he's recommending that there's 0 to 6 deer annually. If we take the average, we'll put it to 3. We multiply it out. We're talking about 20 deer a year being hit on that road on an average. Now, we really don't have any idea how many deer are around, but 20 deer a year by trucks is a lot. I've hit a deer on our road. Many of our neighbors have done that. They're prevalent everywhere, and that could be devastating to our deer population. So that's... Ending that, I would like to touch base on the covered bridge issue. I have a written statement here, but the covered bridge issue is...
Mr. Corcoran, your time is up.
My time is up. Okay, I'll submit it in writing. Thank you. Oh, I do have an expert witness, Dave Boyer, or Joe Boyer. Is Joe here? On who's done an extensive study on the covered bridge. Would you like to speak,
Jim? So we have another expert witness for this issue. That's fine.
Thank you.
He will also get 5 minutes.
Hi, I'm Joe Boyer. I live at 154 Daisy Mine Road.
Speak a little louder, please.
Yes. My voice is kind of rough this morning. Sorry about that.
What was your last name again?
Boyer.
B-O-Y-E-R?
Right.
Yeah.
I'll make this very brief. I'm actually a witness on the history of the area. The covered bridge was built in 1920. The reason it was built in that particular spot was because of a grave which is close by, the grave of Martha Leland Crowley. It's the reason the creek was named Grave Creek is because of this young girl. She happened to be the first person to die on the Applegate Trail in Oregon. She's probably our oldest resident. It was 1846 before Rawlins even was around. Martha Crowley was a very extremely talented young woman. She was trained as medical. She was a musician. She took care of the people on the wagon train on the way in. She died of typhoid fever, mountain fever. And she'd also buried 8 of her members of her family. She started with 15 members, and she was the 9th one to die. They buried her in the spot where the grave is, right next to the creek, and the bridge was placed facing her grave. The grave site was also the same spot that a man by the name of Jimmy Toogood, who was the first man to get a donation land claim in Josephine County, picked that particular spot because it happened to be the exact crossroads of all of the wagon trains that were going to be going north along the Applegate Trail. The grave of Martha Crowley is actually considered a historic site. It's registered with the state. It's called the Martha Leland Crowley Cemetery. The problem with the what's happening with the bridge is that the trucks will be going through this gravesite or this cemetery. And we're talking about between 150 and 180 gravel trucks a day. The problem with that is that this gravesite is on the tour route. There's a walking tour coming from the museum right close by. And thousands of people, at least 7,000 children, visit this as a classroom activity. Numerous tourists stop by there constantly, and they walk through the bridge over to the gravesite into the cemetery. This presents a real hazard. If the other problem is that the road is very, very narrow, the trucks will not be able to make that turn without crossing over the line and presenting a hazard. The other problem is there's another cemetery just right up the road, which the trucks will have to go through. It's a cemetery for the fallen soldiers from the Battle of Hungry Hill. This is a military cemetery, and it's squeezed. The road is squeezed between that cemetery and a historic schoolhouse, which is on the other side of the road. That's also going to create a problem. The main problem is actually safety with the people that go to the Martha Leland Crowley Cemetery. There are numerous historians, writers, people who are tourists and explorers and like to visit these kind of sites, and seeing how Grants Pass in Josephine County is going to a tourism economy, this is going to be very important to the people in Sunny Valley to keep that safe and to create a clean and quiet environment, because people go over there and they actually do pray. They bring her flowers. It's very moving if you understand that and hear the stories of the trials and tribulations of the people that came down the Applegate Trail.
Mr. Boyer, your time is up.
Okay.
But I need to ask you one question.
Sure.
You were talking about the cemeteries. Does Placer Road go between the bridge and the cemeteries? Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, there's an intersection. The Sunny Valley Loop goes right through the bridge, which is, by the way, the Applegate Trail. Placer Road comes in and meets Sunny Valley Loop right at the intersection is right at the bridge. And so it would be inside of the cemetery.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Rouse, do you have any other expert witnesses at this time? Mr. Rouse, do you have any other expert witnesses at this time? You do not. Okay. All right. We are going to, if the board doesn't mind, take about a 10-minute recess here. Okay. Actually, it's 10:45 with a number of people here. Why don't we come back at 11, and we will recess for that time. There are restrooms in the back, and there's a drinking fountain. Is there a drinking fountain out there? Yeah, there is. There's a drinking fountain
right
out there.
There.
And so in 15 minutes, we will resume.
And we'll come back with the item number 3C, which is others in opposition.
Yes. That will be the time for others in opposition. That will be that time. So we'll recess until then.